This Sunday, the decades of the 50s and 60s wind down once again, courtesy of AMC, this time with the benefit of hindsight, and it's also the swan song of Matthew Weiner's creation, Mad Men, his reenactment of the most misunderstood decades of the 20th century.
Whatever your interpretation of the 50s is, you think it's Leave It to Beaver. People were laughing at Leave It to Beaver then. America's a subversive country. The number one bestseller is Catch-22. We are a self-questioning, self-critical culture.
Listen to him talk about books there. Matthew Weiner has spoken of his love, nostalgia, and found wisdom about the decades that said goodbye to one America and delivered hints of one to come.
The interesting thing is when you go into history, the way we do the show is we're trying to capture the impact on the average life of an average person. And, of course, the events of your life are more important. That's sort of one of the theses of the show is that, you know, whatever's going on in your life is still more important than history.
Matthew Weiner talking on The Takeaway in October of 2012. Books were a source for the themes of Mad Men, and they were literally props on the set. Don Draper pages through Portnoy's complaint. Roger Sterling reads David Ogilvy's Confessions of an Advertising Man. And Helen Peterson made the books of Mad Men the basis of a course she taught at Whitman College in the fall of 2013. Mad Men, Historiography, and Media. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So what an interesting idea for a course.
Yeah, it was really fun. I had a huge waiting list.
So the students were big fans of the show.
No. Most of them had never seen the show, which
is
fascinating.
So interesting.
There were two, I think, who had had any exposure to the show. I mean, they knew of it. But part of it was, oh, this is a class where we get to just watch TV. That's always like the appeal of a media studies class.
That always works. Yes.
But on the other hand, like they knew this was going to be a very rigorous class.
What were the books in your syllabus?
There were so many books. And we didn't read, you know, a lot of them. We didn't read the entire thing. It was reading excerpts, but we read Sex and the Single Girl and parts of Confessions of an Advertising Man and Man in the Gray Flannel Suit, Revolutionary Road. The text that really would have formed the culture at the time. It doesn't matter if Don or Betty or Peggy would have actually been reading these books so much as they were influential on the cultural milieu.
What was pivoting? I mean, you talk about media and gender and even our sense of history itself, and that's right in the title of your course. What was pivoting?
Well, you know, even something like television, which we actually see them, the influence of television and how people are getting their news and what they do when they go home, you know. Don, who used to page through magazines to be inspired by advertisements, now, you know, creates and watches television advertisements. But also you're right at the pivot of what would become the women's rights movement and also the civil rights movement. And so that's part of, I'm sure, why Weiner chose this time, because we have a lot of crystallization of a country in transition.
And yet the women in Mad Men are so enslaved by these roles of subservience and really a kind of sexuality. That's what we do.
Absolutely. And I think that they negotiate their power within those roles. So you see someone like Joan. Joan is forced to offer herself as a sexual object, but that also gives her a partnership in the firm.
Do you think the history of this kind of negotiation and emergence using rules that are archaic and eventually going to be wiped out is more emblematic of the time than to say do the story of the feminist hero of the time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of times people get frustrated that we're not following a hyper-feminist. We're not following like someone out in Berkeley who's part of the left. And those stories have been told. And I think it's much more interesting to see how the vast middle, the silent majority, is actually negotiating these issues.
Talk about Betty and Peggy as characters and how you were able to use those characters as a way of exploring books that then have other characters.
Right. I mean, Betty is essentially living out the feminine mystique. And in some ways, she's aware of it. You see like tinklings of awareness that happen in the first and second season. But then she really regresses. And I think she is a fantastic example of someone like a breathing, living embodiment of an ideology.
I think in many ways, the young girls of this generation get criticized for not being feminist enough because their sexuality is so sort of out front.
Mm-hmm.
How did your students grapple with that? And you as a teacher, how did you guide them?
Well, I think reading Sex and the Single Girl was very instructive because there's a lot about it that's outdated, that's homophobic and all sorts of things. But it also, the lessons about that Helen Gurley Brown gives still hold sway. And many of them said things like, you know, what is sexy isn't necessarily, you know, how, what if you're the most beautiful girl in the room, that sort of thing. More, it's confidence. It's being powerful. It's living your own life. Like, those are things that, that really resonated with my students. But at the same time, I think that you're right. Even someone like Peggy, who actually, she tries to wield her sexuality, but she finds herself, because she's powerful in the office, she becomes asexual over and over and again and is really frustrated with her love life.
So she ends up being House of Cards in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Who do you identify with?
Peggy. I mean, Peggy's the best. I love Betty, and I'm a huge Betty defender because I see her as railing against, in her very quiet and angry way, the expectations for a woman at that time. But I see Peggy as a really my antecedent as a working woman who didn't find happiness in the traditional routes of marriage and children and instead found it through her work.
As a journalist now, where do you think this goes in your life as a storyteller?
Yeah, no, I look at, you know, The Office has transformed so much in Mad Men from the beginning when it's all of these typewriters and it's clanging, there's secretaries all over. And then by the end, there's this massive computer in the middle of the office and it's like intimidating. And I think, you know, I look at the BuzzFeed startup office plan that's very, you know, there's like beautiful couches all around and that sort of thing. And I wonder what journalism will look like in 10 years.
And you could write the script for Buzz Babes.
No, I mean, we would never call ourselves babes, I don't think.
No, of course not. Yeah. But, you know, just trying to think of titles.
Oh, yeah, that like how fun. Other people would think about
exactly.
it.
I mean, yeah, they would have never called themselves madmen.
Right.
Either, back
well,
then.
I think BuzzFeed, though, would be about the struggle of the white male to find.
Buzz Boys.
Yeah, well, because Mad Men is about the men in control and how women threaten that in some ways. And I think our current media moment is about the rise and the control of women and people of color, especially at BuzzFeed, and how white men are struggling against that.
All right, now you're threatening me. It's time to go. Anne Helen Peterson's former media studies professor who's taught a class on Mad Men at Whitman College. She's now a features writer at BuzzFeed. Good luck, and thanks so much.
Thank you.